You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hello and welcome to another School of Influence podcast with my host, Neil Schaefer. And today we have Dave Kirpin on the line with us. We're actually doing this on Clubhouse too. And I'm going to hand the intro over to Neil because Dave is one of Neil's connections and friends and brought this to the table. So he's going to do our intro.
Awesome. Thanks, Amanda. Yeah, Dave Kirpin is someone that, you know, in business we say so-and-so needs no introduction. And I think that is very much the case for Dave. I've known Dave, man, I think it was 2014 when Dave keynoted the Social Tools Summit, which is a marketing technology conference that I launched with a partner back in the day. And Likeable Media was there as a sponsor. And I mean, I knew Dave since, you know, when I started getting into blogging and social media marketing, you know, Dave's Likeable books, they were there and he was just a thought leader in the space. But it's not that Dave, you know, built influence overnight. You know, I've seen a progression in his work, starting with, you know, the social media marketing, but really branching all out into just general, you know, business and becoming a thought leader in the business world and doing it in a likable way, which is so much in his brand. So I'm looking forward to tapping into, you know, how Dave did that and what we can all learn from it. And also, you know, what Dave's future plans are. So Dave, thank you so much for allowing us to interview you.
Thanks so much for having me. And as you can see, the Clubhouse contraption isn't so bad, right? It's we practice muting and unmuting, and it works actually quite well. So good to be here with you, Neil, and good to meet you, Amanda. And thanks for having me on the podcast.
Hey, thank you, Dave. So when all this started, Facebook was king, and I still remember some big companies that were forwarding their domain, their website, to their Facebook page because it was so viral. And then you came out with Likeable. You know, what was the spark? How did that you basically now own an adjective and, you know, you've made it your own and everybody equates that with you. How did this all start?
Well, it's actually a funny story. And it was somewhat accidental. The name of our company originally, our first company, our marketing agency was the K-Buzz. And I started with my wife, Carrie, and we figured that Kirpin's creating buzz, the K-Buzz. And we were off to a very good start in terms of social media and doing brand Facebook pages for Verizon and 1-800-Flowers.com and some very, very big brands. And I actually thought about getting into politics, and I ran for city council and Queensborough president in New York City. And I ended up dropping out of the race to focus on my growing business and my growing family. But the then 72-year-old incumbent called me up to thank me for dropping out of the race. And she said, "I hope I get to hear you one day soon." And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Don't you work for that radio station, the K-Buzz?" And I knew it right then and there that the K-Buzz was probably not the best name for a social media marketing company. And we were sitting down with some of our employees and our marketing director at the time, who's actually since gone on to a very big leadership role at Liberty Mutual, Jenna. I came up with the idea for Likeable, and I called up a friend at Facebook and I said, "Hey, I know you guys are about to launch the like button. What do you think of the idea of us calling ourselves Likeable?" And he said, "I really like it, but you know, Facebook, you know us, we're changing things all the time. I have no idea how long the like button will even last." Well, it turned out to be a very good decision. And we bought Likeable.com for $3,000 right before Facebook launched the like button. And obviously the rest is history.
That's an amazing story. And I think that, though, that is only the beginning, because just having an agency name Likeable doesn't guarantee business success and being able to yield the influence that you've achieved over time. And we'll talk about how you're using that for social good as well. But, you know, from the launch of the agency to writing the book. What was the thought process there? Was the book just a natural extension to get customers, or did you have a bigger mission?
Yeah, great question. So I always wanted to write a book, but like most people, you know, many people like want to write a book, but going from wanting to write a book to actually writing a book is a very, very big, and then publishing it and then, you know, the whole nine yards, it's a very big jump. And I was very, very fortunate, Neil, because we were one of the very first agencies to be doing what we were doing in terms of using social media as a marketing tool, as an advertising tool, as a brand building tool. And so the folks from McGraw-Hill reached out to me, cold, and said, hey, we'd love for you to do a book on social media. And here I was with a sort of dream of doing a book and then an actual publisher. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, I know so many people that want to write books and they don't get cold called by publishers asking them to write a book. So it was just really, really lucky and fortunate that they reached out. And then, of course, you know, I ended up getting an agent to help negotiate the deal. And a big part of it was that the title would have likable in it as well, as, on our way towards building that brand. And you didn't ask this per se, but I'll quickly walk you through how the likable brand developed in terms of books. I was doing speeches after likable social media hit the New York Times bestseller list, and I went on the speaker circuit. I was doing all these speeches, and I found myself talking about the principles of likable social media, the book and the concept, and realizing that these principles of listening and authenticity and transparency, these weren't just great principles of social media best practices. These were great principles of business best practices. And so that was really the impetus for writing my second book called Likeable Business, and then my third book called Likeable Leadership. And it was just a progression where I personally realized that, as far as I see the world, the matters around listening and authenticity and transparency and likability really weren't social media issues per se. They were business issues, life issues. These are relationship concepts that can apply not only to Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, but to all of life.
Awesome, Dave. Yeah, and I was going to ask that question. So thanks for answering that before I asked. So, you know, what struck me when I heard you speak at Social Tools Summit was, as you said, your speech wasn't so much about social media, but really about relationships and connecting with people and networking and you know, meeting strangers on airplanes. And I know that through this human connection that you've been a proponent of, that we often forget about in business and in social media, you've really been able to develop some amazing, not just stories, but real relationships. And I know some of those relationships have turned into business as well. Where along the way did, you know, it sounds like you began with a likable brand, but the deeper you got into your own brand, the deeper you saw how it applied to everything that you could do in business and in life. So for those that are listening and, you know, I want to be like Dave Kirpin. I want to launch an agency. I want to be a best-selling author. Can you remind everybody about the role of just talking to strangers, doing good things for strangers and networking and how that's helped, you know, I mean, obviously it's a good thing to do, but how that's helped you in developing, you know, not only your business, but in who you are today?
Well, you know, my father-in-law believed in showing your friendship first, and he ingrained that into me as a younger adult than I am now, certainly. And I really believe that and Bob Berg, one of my favorite authors, you know, Givers Gain, Adam Grant, another one of my favorite authors, you know, Give and Take. There's a huge, huge school of thought here. I am far from original on the idea of giving first and being kind to others and knowing that when we serve others, we end up ultimately benefiting. And just, you know, when we put good things into the universe, good things come back to us. I've just always been a very, very firm believer of this. And I've been fortunate to be the very lucky recipient of good things. And I continue to, and by the way, Clubhouse is the latest way that I believe that that we can give and ultimately end up gaining. But we don't give to gain, we give to give. And good things tend to come our way when we do that. I don't know if I answered your question, Neil, but I did my best.
No, you did. Thank you. I think, Amanda, why don't you jump in?
Yeah. So what you said about relationships, I think, is so important in terms of building trust and influence. One of the things that we try to do, especially with this podcast and with our work, is try to find out not just, you know, the similarities of what makes people like you, people that have become successful in a field as a thought leader, especially so many people have tried to do the same thing that you're doing. And you can argue that other people have worked just as hard or just as much or whatever it is. So what is it that you think, what I try to correlate is like, what are the things that the people that have become successful, what are some of the I know it's never one thing, right? But what are some of the handful of things, and I know you said building relationships, that you think was enabled you to sort of build this independent success in the category that so many others have tried and are still trying to do when they're looking at this and they're like, well, I work really hard and I think of my ideas pretty good. And, you know, what were some of the key factors for you?
Well, first, I will not under any circumstances discount the value of timing and good timing and lucky timing. Timing matters a lot. So, you know, to your point, hundreds of thousands of folks are calling themselves social media agencies now and consultants. But when we were doing it, there was maybe 20, maybe 50, maybe 100. I mean, there really were very, very few folks doing what we were doing back when we started. So we had an enormous first mover advantage. I would say the corollary for that today is be the first mover on something, right? So whether it's TikTok or Reels or Clubhouse or LinkedIn stories or, you know, fill in the blank, but be the first mover on something, take a stand on something, you know, stand for something, build a brand. You know, we have been relentlessly focused on building the likable brand in lots and lots of different extensions. And you mentioned this, but I will close with this because it is my biggest thing, you know, build relationships. Relationships absolutely matter. And it's relationships with clients, it's relationships with prospects, it's relationships with the media, it's relationships with your social media followers, it's relationships with your staff, with your employees, it's relationships with your competitors. All these human relationships matter a lot in building a business and building a brand. And I would urge anyone listening to not take any relationship for granted.
No, that's a great point. And one thing I think that we get so stuck in, especially in the agency field and in marketing, is that agencies are always pushing that we're measuring things like we by number of followers or number of or comments or this vague term of engagement. And some of the most powerful, you know, what you're talking about is relationships. And they're not like, how can you put a number around the relationship that you have with different people, right? And how do you communicate that? I think that's a really hard thing to communicate for marketers and for brands to understand is like, how do you communicate the ROI of relationships when, you know, you're on a client campaign or budget and they're like, but we still need to see, you know, X, Y, Z?
Well, look, ROI and relationships matters, but to be clear, so do campaign metrics, you know, so do campaign metrics. And I think that there are, you can attribute different values to different metrics and you can likewise attribute different values to different relationships, right? So, you know, LinkedIn advertising, for instance, is a lot more expensive in general than Facebook or Instagram advertising, but the quality of the people that you're able to drive through LinkedIn advertising is a lot higher as well. You know, if you're using LinkedIn for a campaign, you might be able to drive 50 CMOs of big companies to a landing page and convert some of them. So with strictly conversion metrics, not all clicks are equal. And the same thing can be true of relationships. I mean, it's just a reality, whether we like it or not, some relationships are going to be more valuable to us than others. Again, I don't take any relationship for granted, but when we're thinking about building businesses, there can only be so many relationships with so many people that we're for whom we're leveling up. And those are the ones that end up potentially mattering to us more.
Hey, Dave, I wanted to thank you for all those answers. I wanted to take a different angle, you know, looking at your influence. So, you know, successful agency, successful branding, best-selling author on the speaker circuit, and you have a few books out. And there's also a lot of other people that are trying to gain the influence that you have. And it I don't know if it's a competition for influence, but at some point, there are things you need to do to maintain, if you want to keep that level of influence to maintain it, right? And I know that you've been really good at revising and republishing your books and keeping them up to date and keeping your name out there. I'm just curious, have you ever thought about that? Or, you know, you have your brand, you have your business, you have your customers, you're doing awesome. Is that something that just doesn't matter as much over time?
Yeah, great question, Neil. I mean, I can't say whether it matters or not to other people. To me, it matters. And to me, I make choices about how I'm going to spend my time and what I'm going to invest in time-wise. And it takes a lot of time to build and maintain influence, for sure. So I make decisions. So for instance, I made a decision about LinkedIn when I first got onto LinkedIn, that this was something really worthy of my time and investment. And again, I was an early mover and built a pretty enormous following on LinkedIn. I made the decision when I first saw Snapchat that like Snapchat was for my kids and I wasn't going to invest. Because of that, I'm never going to be a Snapchat influencer, right? It's just that ship has sailed, right? Same thing with TikTok, basically. And there's some amazing, amazing TikTokers out there, and I'm never going to be one of them. I have zero influence on TikTok. I jumped onto Clubhouse and I said, wow, this is a place where I want to focus on building my influence, right? So I think we make decisions around how we spend our time in the networks where we believe it's worthy of our gaining influence, right? So I happen to have a lot of influence on Facebook and LinkedIn. Pretty soon I'll have some influence on Clubhouse. But in the meantime, that hasn't happened without some sacrifices, including influence on Pinterest and Snapchat and TikTok, where I will, you know, always be an also ran. And I think that's okay. I think the key concept for influencers out there or wannabe influencers out there is not trying to do everything, trying to really pick a lane and focus on that and spend your time consistent with what your goals are.
Thank you, Dave. I know that we're running short on time. Just on a final note, I want to ask you how you're using your influence for good in the world. I mean, I see your posts on Instagram. I get to know you as a person with every photo you post there. And I know that you're trying to do a lot of good in the world. And I know that recently you had Likeable Day, and I was happy and you know, honored to support that. What are you doing in terms of leveraging your influence for social good?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, we just recently had our third annual Be Likeable Day, February 26th, which is a day focused on acts of kindness. We reached 20 million people this year. In 3 years, we've actually reached 100 million people combined around the world, which I'm very, very proud of. It's a simple notion that every act of kindness on social media makes a difference, makes the social media world and therefore the actual world a slightly better place with each act of kindness. I try to give wherever possible. Again, I have to maintain my focus, my number one focus on building companies that will impact the world and impact my family and spending time with my family. But I would say a close third after those two things is giving back. I have office hours every single Thursday afternoon. So I'm actually about to go into them in a bit, where I meet with anyone on the planet that wants to meet with me. And you just go to schedule.dave.com. And so I coach and mentor for free always, lots of different strangers every Thursday. Because of my recent activities on Clubhouse, I think the wait list is like through August now, which is sort of embarrassing and sad as we're recording this podcast in March. But yeah, I really strongly believe in giving back and in using my influence for good. There are folks out there that can use their influence for all sorts of things, and I'm here to say that we might as well use your influence for good if you can.
Amen, brother. Hey, I know time's almost up. Amanda, I'm going to let you get the final word in. I just want to ask, you know, I'm from LA, so Dodgers or Mets this year?
Well, I feel very, very good about the Mets. Obviously, we have new ownership. We've got the best shortstop in the game. We've got a great new pitcher. I love Carrasco. Don't sleep on Carrasco. Obviously, the best pitcher in the game in DeGrom. And I'm very excited about this. This is the first time I've said this publicly, Neil. I will be at both opening days. I will be going down to Washington, D.C. for our road opener against the Nationals, and I will be at my 35th consecutive home opener at Citi Field. Technically, last year I lost the record because it was a cardboard cutout of me in the stands and not actually me. But no, I will be there in person this year, and I am just super, super excited about that.
That's awesome, man. Love to hear it. Amanda.
Thank you so much for your time and your insight. One last question is, of all the places, all the things you do, where is one place that people can find you or where you direct them, where best to get in touch with you? I heard you schedule office hours. What are all the different places? Clubhouse?
Yeah, there are many places, too many places probably. But You can, I said office hours with me is free coaching and mentorship at schedule.dave.com. And then if you, if fortunately for me, per your earlier point, Neil, if you Google the word likable, you'll find lots of opportunities for my books and all that stuff. And I have my speaker site, my speaker website is davekirpin.com, but I'm on all the social networks. As I mentioned before, I'm probably not going to get back to you quickly if you Snapchat me or TikTok me. Can you TikTok people? I don't think so. But I will get back quickly if you reach out on Instagram or Twitter or LinkedIn. And thank you again for having me today.
Hey, thank you so much, my friend. You know, I'm going to be looking out for you on TV on opening day. but thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it. And, you know, keep on keeping on.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.